Greetings. Welcome to Community Coffee Break. I'm BP9, and over on the left there is, is Sabu. Give us a wave, Sabu. And what you see, and there's another, there's Peter below us, but he's not in his chair right now. Doug was trying to get in a while ago, and he's having audio issues, so hopefully he'll be able to come in and say hello real quick as well. Ah, here's Peter. All right, then. So a couple of things. If you watched last week's coffee break, I was trying to figure out how to do encrypted communications, and I was having some fun with that. So what I'm using gcrypt is the library that I'm using, and what I've figured out, I believe, is that I need two public private key sets. I need one for the server, and I need one for the client. So the server has a public private key, and the client has a public private key. And the idea there is that the is you always encrypt, I believe, with the public key, and you decrypt with the private key. And so the whole point of this is to figure out, is so the server can figure out without any question who the client is, the identity of the client. SSL won't do this. SSL, at least to my knowledge, SSL will encrypt the communications, but I don't think you can use that to verify who the person is. Now, Sobu, if you know anything about that, I'd be happy to chat about that with you.
And SSL is not the thing to use. It encrypts the traffic just fine, but it doesn't verify.
Yeah, that was my thought as well. From everything I could read about SSL versus public-private key encryption, your background's bleeding through there, Sobu.
Yeah, I see that.
You're transporting away somewhere is what's going on. I've been working on a project that requires a Raspberry Pi to be on the internet all the time. And one of the things that that I arranged with my internet provider is to get a static IP address. Well, they gave me a block of five of them, which was very nice of them, because I want to put this Raspberry Pi on the internet, but I do not want it to have any access to my internal network. So the quickest way that I could think to do that was to put up another router, plug it up onto my internet modem, and give it the second address, the second static address in the range. It just comes up on the internet now, and then it just works. So so the Raspberry Pi is on the internet, but it doesn't. It does not have any access to my internal network, which is a quick and easy way to do it. Not everybody has the luxury of being able to say, "I want a static IP address, please." But I was able to do that, and that worked out really well for me.
Yeah. I have a static IP, and I'm paying for it.
Oh yeah. This is not free. This is not free, but you know it works. Have you ever seen? I don't know if Dells are the only machines that do this, but I had a reason to spin up Windows 10 on my main machine again.
Sorry. And
yeah, I know. It came with the machine on its own hard drive, so. I was looking at the possibility of dual booting Linux and Windows 10, but Windows 10 has like half a dozen partitions, and the main partition's in the middle of the block. So it's kind of crazy because you try to make the connection work, and it doesn't always. I decided not to do it that way anyway. It turns out that when the Dell machine cranks up, when it goes through post, there's a PF key 12 that you can use to select which hard drive you want to boot off, and you get dual boot facility without having to install Linux and Windows on the same hard drive. So that worked out really well. So now I have two hard drives spinning up in the main machine, and I get to pick which one I want, Linux or Windows 10, and it works. So yeah. It'll pick Linux.
21 years ago, I did a dual booting, my experience is that I know it's changed in the last 20 years, but still, I have bad experience in dual booting. So my recommendation for those who is able to do it is, if you want to have two systems in the same system, have them on a separate physical hard drive to separate them. So.
And that's exactly what I did, but I don't know if every machine is able to select which hard drive to boot on when it starts up. I figured out that Dell can do it, but I don't know if that's specific to Dell or if any machine can do that. It's got to be something built in the BIOS, right?
Yeah, dual booting has nothing to do with the BIOS. The reason that people often have to go into the BIOS these days is to turn off secure boot in order to boot something else than Windows or Ubuntu, who have their have assigned kernel drivers. And yeah.
Well, when I power up the main machine, it gives me the option during the post cycle to press a function key to make pick which boot drive I want to come up on, and that's where it picks where I get to pick either the hard drive that has Windows 10 on it or the hard drive that has Linux on it. By default, it'll boot up on Linux if I don't make a selection. So that works really well. So Doug, can you hear
us? Yes, I can hear you now. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. We hear you as well. Yes, sir. We hear you loud and clear.
Okay.
Good job.
Don't know what was wrong with my headset.
Nice.
Yeah, but we heard you.
Wow.
Fine.
Good.
So.
Yep, we hear you loud and clear. All right, Solbu, what have you been up to this week? Now, since 2 weeks, because we didn't see you last week.
Yeah, since last week I have been assigned a maintenance duty on Voyager. So I found out today that before every coffee break I check to see if the Zoom client is in a new version or if the tarball is changed, and if it is I don't know, then use the new one. And the new one for Linux is 5. Something. It's an upgrade, a major upgrade from the 3. That was available for the last half year. So now I can, as you see, I can have a virtual background. So the lights are seems to be flickering a little bit, but yeah. So no, I've been home.
Yeah, we get that. Good. But what are you, apart from being the technical officer on Voyager, what else have you been doing?
Nothing much. I have today. I was a sound engineer at the church service, but otherwise I'm home doing stuff on the computer, maintaining servers around the country. So. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to thank you for your I wanted to thank you for your help on figuring out the resolve.conf, the etsy/resolve.conf issues.
Yeah. So for those who watched the last episode, the problem is that it turned out in your case it was the network manager who changed it on each time the DHCP sends something. So you need to tell the network manager to not touch the config file, the result conf, and then you have to be sure install a package called resolve conf with no dot. Because then you also install various hacks and changes that disables all known in the guide I wrote, it said that in all the Northern DHCP clients, and I told them to, if they need to change the config file, send it to the daemon that you just installed, and then you tell that daemon to not do anything. So,
okay. So what that means to me is that from now on, even if I connect to a wireless network or something like that, I just got to mute you there. If I can figure out how to do that. Oh, there it is. Okay. What happened there was if I ever connect to a network that's not my home network, then I have to manually fix resolve.conf, because from all the reading that I could do, it sounded like the network manager, it dynamically changes that resolve.conf depending on what network you plug into. And yeah, normally that would be fine, except that the IP address, the 127.0.0.53, which is not the loopback address, by the way, because the loopback address is 27.0.0.1. But the local DNS address, 127.0.0.53, seems to be the local address for the network manager, and then it just figures out what to do from there. But whenever I fire up Netscape, those were the days, weren't they?
Yeah.
Whenever I fire up Firefox, it always introduces a delay whenever the 127.0.0.53 is going on. Do you have any idea why that delay? Because I can't imagine why it should delay. I would imagine it would just immediately switch to whatever the name server that was given to it under DHCP.
I don't know.
Do you know anything?
No?
Okay.
I think it asks, there is a local daemon checks names and it checks the outside service. By the way, the entire 127.class is localhost. The entire, so you can, if you have 127.25.65.61, you are connecting to your localhost. So.
Well, I just thought 127.0.0.1 was localhost. I did not realize that whole class meant localhost.
The whole 127.class is localhost.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. That's much appreciated. So those are the three things I've been working on, the dual boot, the static IP address, and the encrypt and decrypt process, which, we've lost Solbu.
No, I haven't.
We've lost your video?
Yeah, I'm just
debugging. Oh, there you go. You must be switching cameras or something. So, okay.
No,
okay.
There's a stop start video button on the left.
I see. Okay. Well, you've changed your position in the grid now. I have to do all the introductions all over again now.
Who's the new guy?
All right, Doug. Who's the new guy?
Well, you said you'd have to do introductions all over again.
Yeah, it's me. It seems that I didn't know.
It's so boot.
But it seems that if I turn off my video feed, then and I turn it back on again, then I change place in the his client. So
yeah, that's always been the case. Whenever you lose a video feed, when it comes back, it always goes to the end of the list. So yep. And somehow I've zoomed in. I don't know why, but okay, it works. It's okay. I didn't do that on purpose. When you messed with the video feed, Solbu, it just made me zoom in. I don't know why. So all my ugliness comes through now.
Yeah, I will have a stern talking to the engineering crew afterwards.
Yeah. So, Doug, what have you been up to, sir?
Not much, technically. Just working. I work in the photo lab at Walmart, so I use technology every day. But I don't.
Oh, nice.
Not doing any personal technical stuff right now.
Okay. Okay. So I have a whole slew of 35 millimeter films that I've been taking to Walmart to get them converted to CD-ROM. Is that still doable?
Yeah.
The films have already been processed.
We do it through a company called Yes Video, which is in California, I believe, or no, Georgia. They're in Georgia. Okay. And they will put it on DVD for you. Or CD.
Yes Video, you called it?
Yes Video.
Although, as I said, okay. So I could bring it into any Walmart, right, that has a photo, a photo processing center, and they'll do it on my behalf. They've been doing it up until now, but I stopped when the photo processing lab disappeared on me. So I think they closed it down, but I'm not sure. So maybe they just moved it and I couldn't find it.
In a Walmart?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. That is correct.
Well, you can
do
this.
It's certainly possible that they've moved it.
Mm-hmm. You can do this one of two ways. Either go to a kiosk in a Walmart, and you can do it through the kiosk, or you can go online to yesvideo.com and do it there. But either way, you're going to get a printout that if you do it online at home, take the printout with you to the Walmart, hand it to the person behind the counter, and then they can send off your stuff to be transferred to DVD.
Okay. Okay. I have a whole slew of them that I've gotten about halfway through them, and I haven't finished them. And then, you know, Robbie and I talked about this ages ago. We loaded the we talked about various NASs, Synology versus QNAP, I believe, is the other one. One of the reasons I like the Synology box is because it has this application called Moments. And what Moments will do without any prompting from you is it will categorize photos into subjects, events, people. If it finds faces in the photo, it will ask you to identify who that is. And then any other photos where that face shows up, that photo gets tagged with that person's name. So
now, what does this box do?
The Synology box is a network storage device, network attached storage, but it does a whole lot more than just that, right? QNAP also is a NAS, but the Synology has a whole bunch of applications that come with it. And one of those is an application called Moments. It's all local storage. And you're not putting anything on the net, and it's not having to go to the internet to perform this function. For that reason, it takes a while, but it's all done locally, to my understanding. So that to me is what sold it for me. It does not go off. It does not go off to the internet to go and do its thing. So I was very, very pleased about that. I was, when you said you worked for Walmart, I was curious to see if it was still possible to do that with my photos. All right, I'll go back in there and I'll see.
Depending on how many you have, there is also a scanner you can buy online that will scan film.
I tried that. Very manual, very, very time intensive. I just don't have the time or the patience to do that.
Okay.
You actually get better quality photos when you do that, because that scan, I have one. It's called, if I recall correctly, it's called a Maverick scanner. But you have to mount each of the 35 millimeter negatives into a plastic frame, and then feed that plastic frame through the Maverick machine manually.
Oh, okay.
It's a royal pain. It really is. It's a lot of time to do. I'd be more than happy to pay someone else to do that for me.
I can understand that. When we scanned negatives at the store, we used to have a motorized scanner. You'd feed it into a track and then hit a button and it would go to the first frame. You'd hit a button and it would capture it.
Nice.
And then hit a button, it would move to the next frame and then capture that.
Nice.
Yeah, it was it's easy.
It's no longer done locally, though. Is that true?
Correct. Not in our store, anyways.
Right. All right. Well, I'll go back in there. There's a couple of Walmarts near me that I can check, and I can see if they'll still do it for me. And if so, I literally have a bag full of negatives, a shopping bag full of them.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to do them all at once. I haven't done that before. What I do is I'll take in maybe two or three rolls at a time, and take them in that way. But then what I get back on the CD is a whole jumble of pictures. They're not sorted. They're not separated out in any way, shape, or form. And you have to manually do all that. Now, all of my films have a little sticker on them from when they were processed, which have a unique number on them. So it's perfect. I can just sequence by that film number and then by exposure. And it just works really well for me.
If you go to Yes Video, take your, I don't know how you have them arranged, but if they're in a shopping bag, I would sort them first into a box or something and then write the title on the box.
Okay.
Or a number one, number two, number three.
Okay.
And that's the way they will process them.
Okay. Each of the negatives have been cut into four exposure strips.
That's normal.
And they go into like a plastic sleeve, and they're still in that plastic sleeve. So I actually send them off in that plastic sleeve. And then they come back.
I'm just afraid that if they're in a shopping bag, they're getting crinkled and wrinkled mashed up. And
yeah, no.
That's going to make them real hard to scan.
I understand. They're in the plastic sleeve, which is in turn in the paper envelope that the pictures came in when they were processed, when the prints came back in the first time.
Now, that should help protect the integrity.
Yeah, and those cardboard sleeves are what are in the plastic bag.
Okay, good.
So I have not seen any degradation of those negatives in all that time that I've had them that way. And I'm well aware that I don't want them to, to be touching the plastic bag at all. So,
no, static electricity wouldn't do it to me.
No, that's true. There's only one film that I think had some junk on it, had some sort of fungus on it or so. And I'm afraid to touch it because I'm afraid if I try and clean it off, I'm afraid I'll clean off the emulsion right off the film. Yep. So I don't want to touch it. I'm leaving it alone. So. I may have lost that one. And if that's true, that's only one out of many.
Yeah, I'm not real sure what could be done for that. With a photograph, we can always restore it. But I don't know what you could do to restore a negative. You could try talking to Yes Video, see if they have a restoration service.
Right.
I know Fuji will restore photos. I don't know about negatives.
Mm. Okay, Peter, your audio is a bit low, so you want to say again what it was you were just saying? We only have a few minutes to go, so.
Yeah, Peter, try moving the microphone.
I can't hear you, Peter.
Better now.
Yes, much better.
There you are.
I can't hear too well these things in the
field. You've gone quiet again, Peter. You've gone quiet again.
Is that better now?
There you go.
Very good.
Good. Now, don't mess with it now. Leave it alone. He's done it again. He's messed with it and he's gone quiet again.
I can't hear with the headphones on because he can't talk up on the ears. I'm very definitely.
I don't know what's going on, Peter, but we hear the very first part of your audio and then it just fades away.
Yeah, I think his problem is that when he has the headphones on so that he can hear us, we can't hear him. But when he moves the headphones so that we can hear him, he can't hear us. So maybe you need a new headset, Peter.
He's still trying. Keep trying, Peter. Move that microphone up to your mouth so we can hear you. Getting a lot of rustling sound there, Peter.
I'm actively hearing you and talking at the same time. Try this. This is better. This week I went to a Doom funeral, which was interesting.
Oh, wow.
You hear me now?
Yep.
So I went to a Doom funeral. One of my aunts died. She was 95. And, I went to the church that we originally were in where I used to live, and my other aunt was there, and she was, I think she was 99 or something. She was on a similar front of a bit shaky, Stevens, but I think she was on her last legs. But really on her last legs, you know, really pop off, you know. But they all lived to a very old age, one of them lived 105. She used to down the road from us. In London, I remember when school, she was quite near where the school was. I remember that quite well.
Did you go all the way to London for the funeral, Peter?
No, I went on Zoom.
Say again?
I went on Zoom.
It was a Zoom funeral.
Oh, I see. I got it. Okay. Yeah, move that microphone up to your mouth there, Peter. This is not gonna work too well. All right, Peter.
Is that better than that?
Yes.
Now quit messing with it. He's done. It's happened again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Try that.
Don't touch it.
He's messed with it again. Okay, that's all we've got there. You can't look any more than that. Anyway, I went to the funeral and relations are there that I haven't seen for a very long time, you know, like 50 years or 60 years, I think, a couple of them anyway.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I could really remember a couple of them.
Yeah.
So that's that. But other things, I've sorted out the problem with the hairpin problem I had, which I managed to figure out in the end, because I wasn't convinced that the master was right. And I got a feeling somebody made a mistake and copied that mistake, and somebody else copied that mistake and copied that mistake. Cause we had a problem with a textbook uni once who did that. And I think for 4 years they publish the book and
remind me, Peter, what that hairpin was for, and we've only got a couple more minutes, so we can't keep it up for much longer. So what was that hairpin for?
The matching device.
The matching device for the antenna? Antenna matcher?
I'll be going into the matter of it again. I wrote a program that does it. Five different types of matching.
Okay.
And I actually a guy I knew at one of the universities in East Anglia, and he wrote a paper on one of the RGB, and he published it, and I sort of found But the conditions are very narrow, and it's not really any bloody use anyway, you know. But anyway,
we can't. But Peter, I'm going to have to stop you there. We're up to 30 minutes. Got any really quick meeting comments there, or?
Yeah, I just have a little anecdote. Peter was talking.
It has to be very quick, Solbu. Yeah.
He said that one of his aunts is 99 years old. One of the fighters in the Second World War. He was in the Norwegian resistance. 10 years ago or so, he turned 103. He eventually became 104, and when he was 103, he was asked, the biggest news station visited and interviewed him and asked him if he had any wishes for his birthday. Then he smiled and he said that he wished he was 90 years old, for he was much stronger and much more fit than.
All right, I need to close it out, folks. So. I need to. Sorry, Peter, I'm going to go ahead and close this out. I wanted to say thank you to everybody for helping out there, and hope you all enjoyed the coffee break. This is the beginning of season two, so I'm going to do my best not to mess up the new season. So, thank you all for your help and for coming in and joining in and having some fun with me. And we'll do it again next week. And
yep, see you next week.
For now, thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.